Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
I was 9 when I killed Daddy. Daddy deserved it.
Hey Zed Heads, welcome to the podcast. I'm Jason.
And I'm Jonathan.
Jonathan, and this is The Walking Dead Cast, episode 476.
And this episode we're covering Tales of the Walking Dead, Season 1, Episode 3D.
3D. welcome, Jonathan. Your first time on The Walking Dead Cast, right?
Yeah, it is. Yeah, it is. I feel like it's a promotion. I'm very excited to getting closer to the original show, and it's great to have a one-on-one with you.
Yeah, I'll be hosting, and I'll be gone. Jonathan's coming to us from Australia right now, so we're on opposite sides of the world.
Good day, everyone.
And Jonathan's, in case you didn't know, one of my co-hosts for the recent Obi-Wan Kenobi series, which was a lot of fun to cover with you and Rich and Eric. And I was curious, now that some time has passed, have your thoughts changed about that show at all?
Interesting. I still loved it because I love the characters. I love the setting. And it's always great to see Darth Vader and Obi-Wan. But is it a classic? I don't think so. Mm-hmm. Am I glad that we got to see it as I'm interviewing myself? Yes, I do. But no, I really like it, and I still remember it fondly. But will I go back? I don't know whether I'll go back and watch it again. I think I'd like to go back and watch it again and cut out episode 4, I think, to skip that one, which it was a kind of a side mission.
Yeah. Was that the one with, like, the trench coat with Leia under the...
Yeah, exactly. Where it all got a bit weird.
Yeah.
And unconvincing. And stormtroopers just walking in strange directions to fill the back of the scene. And why were they all there? Anyway, this is a Walking Dead cast.
Right. I mean, I just thought I was curious if your thoughts had changed. I mean, I'm pretty much think, like, I thought that series, it was so uneven. It had some really great moments, and some really stupid ones. But it was worthwhile, all said and done,
definitely.
I thought. And I liked how it kind of tried to fill in some of the gaps with Star Wars and explain some things. And that was, I don't always like that kind of thing, but I thought they did a pretty good job with it overall. So, yeah, I enjoyed it. And usually podcasting on something makes me like it more, too. So maybe that helped a little bit.
Exactly. And there were some great, there were some bad lightsaber duels, but there were some great ones as well. Mm-hmm. You know, whether that was on purpose or not, who knows. But it was really up and down. But still, just seeing Darth Vader was fantastic. And seeing Obi-Wan again, just kind of, you know, it was just great to see, but I don't think it was a classic, no.
I mean, there are some scenes, and I don't want to give too much away, but just that it really bridged the gap between the prequels and Star Wars with the character of Anakin in particular that were pretty thrilling. But yeah, I can't argue with anything you said. It was also, I just want to mention, we had a great, well, I wasn't there, but you had a great interview with your friend who played a Jedi in the prequels.
Oh,
that's worth just going back and listening to that. So that was a lot of fun.
Great.
But let's, before we get into this week's episode, I've had guest hosts on while Lucy's on vacation, and I just asked them what their history is with The Walking Dead, like how far do you go back and stuff like that.
Yeah, well, I go all the way back. I watched the first season live as it aired, okay. I think. Mm-hmm. And then
and you were here in the States at that point, or
yeah, I was yeah. living in the States, and then kind of let it go, but then saw the second season, I think, when it was available to binge, and then I binged 2 and 3, and then got back into it. That's when I discovered all the podcasts and found you guys, and then really got into it and started enjoying it as, you know, a full thing, you know, with podcasts and watching the show yeah. and discussing and thinking about it, which makes it all the more fun, as everyone knows.
Yeah, of course. I mean, at that time too, I think is when it really just shot into the public consciousness, like
yeah.
season 3, 4 became this big cultural thing that everyone yeah. was talking about and stuff. Those were the days.
I think that the moment that really kind of turned me around was like in the first episode, obviously with the bicycle rider lying in the yeah. In the grass. That really kind of moved me. Mm-hmm. But then it was the was Carol's daughter walking out of the barn,
mm-hmm.
and that came as such a surprise to me, and really hit me hard emotionally, which kind of shocked me. I wasn't expecting
yeah.
it to happen like that. And then after that, I'm all in. And you know, the opening scene, I think, of season 3 with a cold opening where they're working their way through the house and they're all a bit more professional
that's
now.
That's so awesome. Yeah.
Yeah. And I'm just like, oh, this just gets better and better and better. Yeah.
Yeah. It's so interesting that scene with Sophia coming out of the barn, it really did just ignite a lot of people's interest in the show. Mm. And when you think about it, it's like, oh, there's all this hope that they're going to find this girl. They're looking for her. Nope, she's dead. Oh, I love this show.
Not only is she dead, she's doomed to a life of being a walker. Right. And in no other show would they kill a child like that. Die. And yeah, you're right. It's a very interesting reaction.
That's what happens.
Oh, this is awesome now. Yeah. You know?
I was just...
the kid's dead.
Because we have this Patreon exclusive podcast, patreon.com/JasonCabassi, called The Zedhead Show. And the one we did this month, just recorded a few days ago, actually was Deaths of the Walking Dead, kind of inspired yeah. by the one that you and me and Rima did on Game of Thrones death.
Yeah.
Anyway, of course, we brought up Sophia, and I had mentioned that because I was a zombie extra in the season 2 finale, and that episode with Sophia coming out of the barn had not aired yet, but we were filming the finale, and the extras were like, yeah, Sophia was in the barn. I was like, what? And so,
but that was the whole thing. That was it just so came out of nowhere, and it was so subtly done. You just kind of all readying up to battle the zombies as they come out, and then you see Sophia in the background, just a glimpse, and then you're like, oh my god, and yeah. it slowly dawns on you, and just the horror and the tragedy of it all, and
Carol's,
you know,
right,
but
there.
At the same time applauding, you know.
But I mean, for me, because I got the shock by hearing it, and it was shocking, but then when that episode came along and she came out, I still felt like, oh wow, this is a moment, but I didn't get the same hit as everybody else because I already knew, you know. I hate spoilers.
Funnily enough, when, you know, because I read all the Game of Thrones books, and so when spoiler after, you know, I knew everything, you know? But when they came up, it was still so gratifying to see it come to life. But yeah, when you're told that, you know, no one wants to know that spoiler ahead that Darth Vader is Luke's father in Empire Strikes Back.
My stupid friend in second grade did spoil that for me too.
You're just living a life of spoilers, it seems.
I try to avoid it as much as I can. All right, well, let's get into this week's episode. It's Tales of the Walking Dead, season 1, episode 3D. So what did you think of this one?
Well, look, I've always been here for the survival horror rather than the relationships. But when they explore relationships in this way of like, you know, what would you do? How far would you go? When do you serve yourself and when do you submit to others? You know, is the security of a group more important to your inner circle's security? You know, when they explored that part of the relationships, you know, I just really like it. And I thought this was, especially the first half, something new and a classic Walking Dead episode. And after the first 2 episodes of Tales, it was nice to come back to a classic Walking Dead episode, and I just loved the art direction and the photography, and it's always when people try to live normally during the ZA, I know they're a little bit crazy, so I was looking forward to what would happen in this. But I really enjoyed it, really liked it.
That's good. If it's too good to be true, then it's too good to be true. It's not going to last, usually.
What did you think?
I liked it. I was a little confused about the timeline with Alpha, but that didn't really take away from my enjoyment of the episode. I thought the performances were great, especially Samantha Morton. I also loved the art direction. That was so beautiful.
It was really refreshing.
Beautifully shot, and the way whatever they did to it afterwards. It was horrific. I mean, I love that her character is so, we know what she's done, and also just the way Samantha Morton plays her. I just thought anytime anybody insulted her, they were just about to die, you know? And that was kind of thrilling. Like, oop, you better not do that. And then, you know, watching it again and getting a little deeper into it, I thought it had a lot to say about Alpha's character. And I thought they did a pretty good job with that. So I think it could have been an episode in the main series, especially since they already had two Alpha flashback episodes. I thought it was really good. I liked it.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
All right. Let's get into our points. What do you got?
Well, I'm going to kick off with the art direction and photography, because I think that really kind of kicks off with that, with the opening dolly shot of the boat zooming in. It looked like a set, and it really evoked the feeling of a play. And with all the mist in the backgrounds and simple, well-framed shots.
And just the riverboat, it's like out of another age, the and the glowing lights. It's a cool setting.
Exactly. And it was just like that cool lighting and the mistiness of outside. It felt like a Turner painting. And then we go into the sumptuous interior, warm lighting from another world at another time. And, you know, where people are not even thinking about the ZA.
There's like a ragtime band in there or something.
Yeah, exactly. They're all dressing up. And I thought this episode was dripping with references. And it, like that scene when they come into the bar reminded me of The Shining, when Jack Nicholas goes in. And there was, you know, then there was a Death of the Nile kind of thing with the disappearance of Mr. Langdon. And then that started to get the mystery involved, which never really paid off, unfortunately. And then you have kind of Hitchcockian references when Alpha's calling out Billy, I think. And then they had the wide angle shot, and all the lines of the boat were kind of pointing towards her and creating another layer of tension. And then the beautiful, insistent, mournful music throughout the whole episode.
All of it was so good. I love the music.
And I just thought it could have been a standalone movie. I kind of wish it went on for a movie length or over two episodes, because it felt a bit rushed towards the end of the first half, and then there were so many interesting parts of the second half. I wish it had a bit more time to breathe. But after the kind of comedy flashback of the episode two and the unevenness of episode one, I really enjoyed this episode.
One thing I'm really digging about this series is how different they can be in tone and content. And this was really serious and somber and more like The Walking Dead often is, which is even more intense than it can be at times.
It really felt like an early episode of The Walking Dead, you know, original cast and all of that, where they held shots a bit longer, and there were tonal elements, and the scenes had time to breathe and time where the actors had time to show emotions, and when you give that time, you identify more with them, and you feel the feelings the actors are giving as well. But I just felt the grade of the film contrasting the outside to the inside, it was a metaphor for the bubble that these people mm-hmm. were in. When you walk in, suddenly everything's warm and busy and fun and comfortable and everything. But as soon as you walk outside, it's lonely and eerie, and you've got the lights of the riverboat kind of watching you and watching the shoreline. And it really had a great eerie feeling to it.
Yeah.
And there were some beautiful wide shots as well. I always talk about the wide shots. There were some establishing shots of the boat on the river and cutscenes of the boat. And it was really well done, I thought. Mm-hmm.
Have you ever watched Breaking Bad? Did you get into that?
I think I just didn't have the right timing of it. Mm-hmm. Like, I think I missed the first five seasons, and I've tried to get into it a couple of times, but I should try again because it's known to be one of the great shows.
Yeah, I mean, I kind of think that if you're not into it, you're just not, you know, I feel like that first episode will either hook you or not. But yeah. One thing about that show is they're all fans of film and they love old films, and they have great cinematography on that show. And they were originally going to shoot it in Los Angeles, but the parent company wanted them to do it in Albuquerque, New Mexico instead because it was cheaper. And they're like, oh, okay. And that ended up being crucial.
Became a character.
Yeah. Yeah. It's so, such a beautifully shot show a lot of the time. My favorite, I think, is, yeah, it is what you're talking about. They're inside, Lydia's off dancing or something. D is looking, you know, Alpha is looking uncomfortable but, you know, just sort of bearing it. And then she steps out to the outside and to the edge of the boat and looks off into the trees. And it's such a beautiful shot. There's a silhouette of jagged trees, and there's Zed's ambling around, and there's illuminated mist blowing by. And I think, yeah, she's just like, look, I know you're trying to ignore the reality of this world, but it's right around, all around
right
us.
Right there, just over that small stretch of water. But did you notice that one of the silhouettes of the walkers, and that's the interesting thing about it, was I imagining it did actually happen? And I, on second viewing, I noticed it did happen, that one of the walkers just stopped and stared at her. And so I thought it was actually one of the whisperers observing it from the shore.
Interesting.
Because it stopped enough, because they're all ambling through, and then one just stopped, turned, and was square.
That's
and
creepy,
staring,
man.
At
you're
her.
Creeping me out.
Yeah.
You said that the mystery of Mr. Langton was unresolved, but I thought it was pretty clear that Billy got rid of him, right?
Oh, yeah.
But they just didn't show it, really.
They kind of just, I did it. But then I thought that when they found that body on the second floor when they were all attacking, I thought that was him, but that was one of the guards. Mm. But I was really kind of like excited for this small murder mystery, what they were leading to, and that, you know, the play like settings of it, of just, you know, small stage of it.
Sure.
And I was hoping that there would be that feeling of mistrust coming through it all, but then they just kind of moved on.
Maybe if it was a movie length, like you said, they could have spent more time in that part of the episode. I do think that they would probably love to do a sequel to this because there's some unanswered questions by the end of it. But we'll get into that.
Yeah, for sure.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
So, I'll start with the Alpha / D timeline, because I think they've been talking about, I'm not sure how this squares with what we've seen on The Walking Dead.
Yeah, I didn't pick up on that, but I've noticed in various feedbacks that the timeline with Beta didn't quite line up.
Yeah, I mean, you can make it work, and I'm sure the writers thought about it. Like I mentioned, we saw a couple of flashback episodes already about Alpha, and I'm going to just summarize. Well, I'm going to read the synopses of those to remind us all.
Yeah.
So in season 9, episode 10, Omega, Dee, along with Frank and Lydia, survived the initial stages of the outbreak. After 23 days, she and her family remained in a moldy basement with a group of survivors. Dee was eager to leave, but her husband insisted they stay. Dee eventually cut her hair off to spite Frank, her husband, who liked her hair long, explaining she could do whatever she wanted since it was the end of the world. After 43 days, the undead began to overrun the outside of the building. Fellow survivor Matthias started to have a panic attack and wanted to leave the basement. Dee, knowing noise could draw the walkers in, smothered Matthias to death by crushing his windpipe, believing he was too weak to survive this world. Later that night, and I think that's when actually Lydia's father was singing the Tattooed Lady song to try to drown out Dee killing this guy, I think. I didn't go back and watch the episode again, but later that night, unknown to the group, a reanimated Matthias began to attack them. Dee then attempted to lead her family to safety by escaping, but Frank tried to save their friends, which resulted in Dee murdering him. So that was that episode. And then I think everything that happened in this episode on the riverboat is next. Well, I think she also, did she shave her head at the end, or maybe she just like cut her hair? But now she's decided to come to this riverboat, and she's been here for a year, and her hair has grown back out. And
Right.
At the end of this episode, she leaves the boat, meets Hera, the leader of the Whispers, who we didn't even know existed before Alpha until now. Apparently joins up with them, and then at some point leaves them. We don't know why, but then the second flashback happens, which is season 10, episode 2, We Are the End of the World. So at some point, Dee and Lydia are forced to seek shelter in an abandoned hospital, and they encounter a lone man wearing a mask. He reluctantly allowed them to stay one night, but forbade them from entering his private quarters. Dee and the man eventually formed a bond due to them sharing similar views about the new world. Though after she tried to see his face, he demanded her and her daughter leave. Lydia, however, eventually trespassed to his side of the hospital, forcing Dee to follow her, and ended up killing the man's zombified best friend to his fury. Dee calmed him down and welcomed him to join them, also convincing him to skin his friend's face off and wear it to continue hiding his identity. The man accepted and took his friend's shirt. So in the moment, we just thought she just sliced this guy's face off. And I mean, you know, you don't always worry about whether things make absolute sense logistically or whatever. But one thing that this does, where she meets some whispers in between these two episodes, is that maybe she learned how to do that.
Right.
You know, so that explains why she would even be able to do it. And then this is also the episode where she names herself Alpha and names Beta Beta. And then apparently after she meets Beta, she goes back and kills Hera, the leader of the Whispers, and uses her face as a mask, which is what we saw in The Walking Dead.
Which was awesome.
Blonde hair. Yeah. And then we don't know.
I didn't think I needed to know where Alpha's mask came from, but seeing that the final shot of this, it was fantastic.
I mean, if you're going to find out who it is, and if they're going to make it so that the Whispers already existed, then I guess it's pretty cool that the mask is the former leader of the Whispers that the new leader wears.
Yeah. But I'm still confused where this episode fits in. Because it felt like at the end of the episode that she was meeting the Whisperers for the first time.
She was,
She was. And so she joined the Whisperers as part of them, and then kind of
left
for some reason, met Beta, came back, took over again, and installed herself as a leader.
I guess so. Or else she took over or she just like started her. I mean, I think she must have taken over because she killed the leader of the of the Whispers. So that's interesting because instead of it turns out Alpha and the Whispers might kind of be like Negan and the Saviors. Negan did the same thing. The Saviors already existed. He took over. And for that matter, just about every group Rick's ended up leading existed before he got there. But I also kind of like the idea that the Whispers.
Rick the villain.
I also kind of like the idea that the Whispers were fully Alphas. That Alpha and Beta invented them together. I think this is pretty clearly a retcon, and the original idea was that, but not anymore.
No.
So,
but it,
so
that, it kind of doesn't bother me though. You know, it didn't even occur to me during this that this was out of time. I just thought it was more interesting at how it recontextualized the characters of Alpha and Lydia.
Me
and
too.
Why that, well, especially Lydia, you know, because I never really bought Lydia in The Walking Dead because she was too plump and her skin was too perfect and she just looked as if she led a normal healthy life rather than in the woods, you know, never being under shelter, and why she was so crazy. But then seeing this episode and what she was constantly subjected to in an effort to survive, I kind of believed her more and felt that Lydia's character had more, it was more believable at how crazy she was in the later episodes.
Yeah, I felt like that too, especially the part about how when she arrived in Alexandria, she struggled to relax into it. And maybe, you know, now that we see that she really fell for this riverboat to the point where she wanted her mom to get the hell out so she could have a new mom. And then it just went to hell and her mom took her away and told her, this is, you know, going to kill you, this kind of thing. If you believe that this can happen, you're just going to end up dead. So then later on when she encounters more civilization, she's had a rough upbringing around that.
Yeah, a rough 10 years, I think, on the road, or however long it was. But
she was 9 here, and I think she was 16 when they first came upon her in The Walking Dead. So 7 years.
Well, that adds up, doesn't it? Yeah. But I think, the recontextualizing of the characters was really good. And it was like, you know, going back to the Obi-Wan series, seeing all the other backstories and things recontextualized as Vader for me every time I see it now. You know, so that was a good part of this episode.
Yeah, sometimes the recontextualizing of Vader is not good. But sometimes it's good.
Yeah, well, recontextualizing of Anakin as Vader.
Yeah, no, I loved that. Yeah, about the series. When I watched the prequels with little Annie, I wasn't so thrilled with it. But no, this was good. Okay, what's your next point?
Well, I would talk about how they approach class in this episode, and again with the metaphor of inside and outside, and of the bubble being the inside where everyone's normal and well-dressed, but there's still the dirty workers and the dirty guards that are on outside. And before we go into the party, they come around and Lydia's dressed for the party, and she goes, looking good doesn't mean anything. And in the ZA, it doesn't, you know, it doesn't mean anything. I don't know how people even have long hair, you know. And everything should be practical because it's a daily survival. But I guess when you build that bubble, you can indulge, but it always means that you're dropping your guard. And
sounds like you're buying into Alpha's whole ideology.
Kind of. I mean, but that's what I really enjoyed about this, that I didn't really buy the Whisperers for so long. Mm-hmm. You know, I didn't buy this whole thing of like, you know, I understood. I thought it was great how they had the hordes that they would use and everything. But then I couldn't work out why they had control of these. The lifestyle of just sitting in the dirt all day. And how
this
works.
Helps make that feel a little more understandable for sure.
Yeah, yeah. But I love the. Go on.
Well, she said, you know, I'm afraid you're raising Lydia. She said to Brooke, the leader of this group. I'm afraid you're raising Lydia's expectations too high.
Yeah.
And what she really wants to say is, this is all fucking bullshit. And if you let you're letting your guard down, and let's accept the world for what it really is now, which is basically shit. And let's live in that truth and not fool ourselves and then drop our guard. Kind of something like that, you know?
Exactly right. Exactly right. And so that was really interesting. But then Dee questions, well, she Brooke questions Dee about why she worries about everything so much. And that's coming from, speaking of class again, a person of in a position of privilege where the daily of worry of life is she's insulated from it. It's almost like asking, why doesn't everyone eat organic food? And you know, it's just like, why aren't we all just partying and living a nice life and wearing clothes beautiful clothes, and you know, where Dee was constantly on alert, scanning the horizons, listening for every snap of a twig.
Yeah,
you know, Brooke referred to going for a run as shopping. You know, and there's an interesting scene where they were arguing just before it all went down, Brooke was wearing a riding outfit with a waistcoat and a white shirt and high waisted pants, a scarf around the neck, with very aristocratic, versus Alpha wearing a blue denim boiler suit. You know, as working class as it gets. But Dee knew that the balance, this power dynamic, no longer really existed, and so when she turns around, she goes, "Now you listen to me." Mm-hmm. Was just sort of just getting her attention, but it was such a understated threat of like, you really don't know what's going on. Brooke also saying to her, you know, what kind of life is this of being on the road and surviving, and with the assumption that her life of parties and dresses was inherently better. But it doesn't take much for this power dynamic to shift, where Dee is suddenly the one in charge. As soon as there's trouble, the whole power dynamic shifts to the strong kind of working class person, and the aristocratic person is,
as I feel,
kind of a bit
it's
lost.
About to do any day now on planet Earth, you know.
Yeah, no, but that's exactly it. That's what it feels like. Yeah. It's, you know, my last year in America was a crazy year, and you felt bad things were coming, and it still doesn't feel like that's been addressed or balanced, and the tension in the United States still.
Yeah, I mean, I have days where I feel more optimistic than others. For I don't want to tell everyone that I definitely think the end of the world's coming. Just maybe.
Just maybe. But going back to your podcast on last week's episode, that listening to this show prepared me, watching The Walking Dead and listening to the podcast prepared me for the pandemic. Because I started to hear little news items on the radio, on the TV. And a small outbreak has happened in Wuhan, China. And I'm like, this doesn't sound good. And then it kept coming. And in Australia, they're starting to hoard toilet paper. So I started to order toilet paper online and things like that. And I started ordering masks I ordered masks before when there was still plenty on Amazon.
Yeah.
And then a week later, I go into Trader Joe's and the shelves are empty.
Yeah, that was creepy,
and then,
man.
That was weird. And you knew something was coming down the pipe, you know?
Yeah, I remember going to my supermarket down there, down the street, and it just felt so creepy to see the shelves so bare.
Because we've seen it all before, whereas you know, people that don't watch The Walking Dead are going, oh, that's interesting. They must be just going to restock shortly. But I'm like, no.
No. I mean, the thing that I love about the character of Brooke is that she didn't seem like an idiot. You know, she seemed like she really wanted to preserve the sense of civilization. And as she said at one point, something about you need to balance joy with caution. And that's kind of what I believe in my life. And also whenever anything went wrong, she's like, we need to change the protocols around this. Like she's trying to develop systems to handle things that may go wrong. In fact, she made the hard decision to leave this missing guy behind because they didn't have enough fuel to wait around. So, I mean, she didn't seem like an idiot, but, maybe in the end, yes, too naive for this world. You know, she was trying to be careful enough, but maybe you'd need to be a Rick Grimes or an Alpha to survive, you know?
I think so, because it's like when you do things like have this real world party, like that, which happened in the main show as well, when they had, when at the
CGC?
It's been a while. Yes, exactly. Mm-hmm. When they had that party, which was like the Met Ball, basically. And I just say, having that in this setting is insane. Whereas when they had the festivals at the Kingdom, that seemed an appropriate level of celebration, because everyone's all in it together. But there were people still trying to maintain the hierarchy of class structure.
Yeah, well, that's the whole thing with the, what do you call it? It's been a while since I talked about the main series, the Commonwealth.
That's the one I was reaching for. Yeah,
yeah. Like, I mean, they're doing it on a grand scale, and you know, I'm biased because that's the world I came from. But it seems like if you can recreate that with some semblance of security, it would maybe be a good thing. And that's why I think it's, a lot of people are super bored with the storyline, but then you come to the question of, but do we want that whole class structure that seems to come along with that, you know, where some people get the shit into the stick. I just think that's kind of fascinating.
Yeah. So do I think I look forward to the, you know, the last eight episodes, which is kind of weird but it doesn't feel like it's ending. Actually,
I know, especially like with the Rick Michonne spin-off.
It's splitting into four different, shows rather than just finishing.
Another thing I've been saying is I think the low quality of Fear the Walking Dead has just sort of given people this feeling that Walking Dead spinoffs are not good. But I think the writing on this show has been, well, definitely better than Fear, and pretty good. Like, I've enjoyed every episode, and I really enjoyed the last season of World Beyond too. So I'm hopeful that some of these spinoffs will be worthwhile.
Yeah, I've really enjoyed this, and I didn't realize it would be a bit Black Mirror-y and a bit kind of off, you know, and not quite right. And it's interesting to have this episode to feel like a classic Walking Dead episode. But I enjoyed it. I look and I've watched ahead, and I enjoy this for what it is, you know, and I feel that in this sort of anthology, you can play with things. Although the one thing that did make me laugh was in episode one was when the girl did the cartwheel and he was like, what was that? And it's just like, capoeira.
Yeah.
The most useless martial art there is. I'm not sure doing cartwheels in front of zombies is going
to
be
They just wanted successful. To make it appropriate for a hippie type, I think.
Exactly.
Well,
exactly.
I've
been enjoying this. I think the writing is of a high standard, and
me too.
And it outdoes Fear, and because of all the plot holes. But I am interested in coming back to Fear for next season with the return of the
Madison,
the mother Madison.
Well, she already came back for an episode. And it was crap, I thought.
Oh, no.
so bad.
Really?
Yeah. You got to watch that. I want to know what you think.
Oh, okay. I got to hate watch it.
If you like it, no, that's fine. But no, I did not. But we're getting off track. My next one is why Dee was on this boat. And I think it was all about motherhood, which is fitting because Alpha's story was always about motherhood, at least to a degree. There was a telling moment where when Billy jumped off the boat and, you know, they made it out like it was because Dee had the knife and why did you treat him like that? And then Lydia sees and she's kind of spooked and Brooke says she's afraid, your daughter's afraid of you. And then in voiceover, Alpha says, I went mad in that basement and Lydia saw. I tried to repent. I tried. And so she's talking about that first flashback episode where she killed that guy. Mm. And I think she feels bad about having scared Lydia by killing this guy. And and maybe even, you know, she also killed Lydia's father. And so she's trying to repent. And I think this whole boat thing is her like going back in the other direction from that and trying to give Lydia what she wants, a normal life. And so this whole thing that Brooke's trying to do is she knows that's what Lydia wants, the dresses and balls and music and restaurants. And then Brooke telling Dee that children need normalcy, structure, schedule, celebrations. Like Dee's struggling with all this because that is why she's there, to try to give her that. But it's not, it's so contrary to her own nature. As she says, I worry, I think you're setting expectations too high. So she's struggling with it. And Brooke says, I feel sorry for you, Dee. You're so caught up in all the things that could go wrong that you can't enjoy the good stuff. And, I think that she has a point there, but in the ZA, it's like, nope, as we've seen, no. Dee is more right, I think. Although the Commonwealth, so who knows, but, then
but that takes a massive structure of defenses to make you feel, and they're, what have they got? Maybe two or three guards on shore or a couple of two guards on the boat.
Yeah.
And like, that's the whole thing with the question of being on the road. Is being on the road safer with constantly movement? Because it seems like as soon as you find somewhere and turn the lights on, you may feel secure, but you also attract attention.
Yeah, and it's fine for the zombies. It's great. They don't do so well with swimming, but not for the people.
Yeah.
The bad people, as we saw. And I also just think what's relevant is Dee's own past makes it really hard for her to do what she's trying to do. As she says, I was 9 when I killed my daddy. I don't know if we knew that before, but daddy deserved it. and so I presume she was abused.
Seems in character.
Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah. I mean, she killed her father. She killed her husband. And so she's lived a hard life, and to her, the world is a dangerous, bad place, and you can't count on anyone. You can't trust anyone. So it's especially hard for her to be comfortable in this environment. I think she's doing it solely for Lydia, but by the end, she's completely changed her mind and become disillusioned with all of it.
Yeah, because when you're in that situation of a group dynamic, you have to give up a certain amount of control of your security to other people.
Mm-hmm. You have to trust.
Yeah, and that's exactly, and that trust was a big thing in this episode, I thought. And Dee knows that she can, Alpha knows she can survive on her own when she controls everything. It's when things tend to go wrong with her when she's not in control, and as we saw here.
Yeah, and then in the end, she made the mistake of trusting Negan.
Yes. Yes, that's right. That's right.
Okay. Next one.
It's a good show. The workout scene. The workout scene came in the middle, and for me, just kind of, I'm like, what? I was really enjoying that. Why are we suddenly here? And it just kind of ruined the tension and the magic and the eeriness had established, and it brought me back to some Instagram video from the 2020s. It felt
like it might belong more in last week's episode.
Yeah, exactly right. Because I don't think, like, you know, white athleisure existed in 2010, and there were certainly no influences, you know. And then they came, but I've just felt that kind of changed everything, and the tone shifted in that. So I didn't really enjoy that that moment. But and then their cringe saying of like, we take, when in the next scene it's like, we take care of our things, and our things take care of us. Like it was some kind of call out reply about which felt a bit out of place as well. So
it did, but it's a real contrast to the whispers. Maybe that was kind of the point where they don't have any things, you know.
Yeah,
I get it. Yeah,
yeah. So that was just kind of a funny scene. Mm-hmm. But it's interesting how small things can just completely take you out of the world that they try so hard to build, and the tension that they try so hard to build But it, you know, was it intentional? Was it intentional to have her in that pure white outfit and, you know, being the leader? But I found that scene just a little bit out of context.
Yeah, I mean, I guess the point was, it feels naive, you know, just like all the other signs of the former world. But yeah, it was a bit much. And the other stuff was more charming because it felt more old world.
Yeah.
And this felt like it came out of, like a few years ago or something. Or now.
Yeah, exactly. So a small nitpick.
Cool. All right. Well, this one is kind of a long one, but it's why I think D changed, and not only changed her mind about these people, but as she says, I think the first thing she says in voiceover as Alpha is, "Let me tell you how I died." Right. And so this is the point of this episode, is this is where D decided, no, I can't live in the civilized world anymore. That will just kill me and my daughter. But she gave it her best shot. And when we see her sitting at the bar, the bartender, Billy, is judgmental. You maybe should make more of an effort. I'm like, you're going to die. That's what I thought. Like, she's going to just reach over and kill you right now. Yeah. And he says, you know, I've only been here a couple of weeks, but I see how it works. Brooke bends over backwards, making everything nice. And people like you show up looking like drowned possums. But then it turned into a mystery for a while. Like you said, Mr. Langston disappeared, had been drunk. And D says she heard a splash, but didn't say anything because the swamp is always making noises. And then she said, ask Billy, he was serving her. And I mean, our context is Alpha's dangerous, lethal, not to be trusted. That's what we know of her. And she, the way Samantha Morton plays her, it's unsettling just to be around her.
Yeah.
And so in that moment, I thought, well, or at least I thought what they want us to think is that she got mad at Billy for saying those things to her. So she went and killed Langston, and now she's going to frame him on it and get him kicked off. Frame him for it. Right.
Yeah.
But actually she was telling the complete truth. She doesn't know what happened to him. She did hear a splash, I guess, and didn't think anything of it. She saw him talking to Billy. She doesn't trust Billy for what turns out to be good reason, but we don't know that yet.
And Alpha's instincts, apart from Deegan, seem to be always on point, you know, and that there was the scene where she came outside and she was breathing heavily, and you just see this very faint light dancing over her, and which is from, seems to be from the mirror, like a reflection from her. And she went from kind of from doubt to certainty,
right?
And then suddenly Alpha appeared, you know, it was a bit smeagly, you know, and Alpha appears, and then he goes, "All right," and goes out and confronts him.
Yeah, and but even in that moment, because they don't show, she's like, "You just dropped something," but we didn't see it. So,
but you did hear the splash. But there is that kind of like,
what's really happening here? Yeah, is she paranoid? She seemed a little frantic. So,
is she just trying to get rid of Billy from that insult that you mentioned?
Yeah, right. And also like, you know, I just like Brooke doesn't trust her either. You know, she says, "You don't trust anyone." And I think people who aren't charming have a tougher time in the world, whether it's CA or now. And people don't give you the benefit of the doubt. Sometimes I feel bad for unlikable people because you get a guy who's likable and charming and says something to a woman that's flirtatious and it will be received a certain way. And you get another guy that's unlikable and he'll be received a way different way. And I, of course, it's
way different these days.
But sometimes it's like, oh, it's not fair. And this episode was like that. Like everything she did was honest.
Yeah.
she did see him drop something in the water, and they were all on her shit for that. She calls Brooke down and says, "Where's Erica? She was supposed to be working with him." "Oh, I'm right here. I was with him until just a few minutes ago." "Yeah, well, it would just take a few minutes to signal your friends." Mm-hmm. And then Dee says, "You know, he was with Mr. Langston too." And Brooke's like, "That's a big accusation, Dee." So watching this through the second time, knowing that she was telling the truth, I felt less, Brooke was a lot less likable. Mm-hmm. Brooke was very likable to me on first watch when I thought that, you know, Dee's just a big old psycho and who knows whether she's telling the truth. But then once I knew, I'm like, oh, you should trust her.
Yeah.
Of course, that's with the benefit of knowing.
Is it going back to that class thing of like, yeah, she's just the janitor and, you know, the janitor might see things, but I would never take the janitor's word over the bartender's word or something.
There's that too. I mean, yeah. I my point about it's about her personality, but you're right too. Right. It could be just about her station. And Billy, he seems totally cool, like the cool bartender, innocent. Yeah. But what? I don't know. What? She's just going nuts here. And I think psychopaths can be really good at seeming innocent sometimes. Yeah. And I mean, sometimes guilty people are likable, you know, so they get a better deal.
Because I was a bit disappointed when he just dived off the boat.
I know.
Because I was hoping that there'd be this continued tension between the two, who's going to believe who. And we, at that stage, you're right, we didn't actually know whether he did throw it, if there were hints of it with the splash and the dancing light on Alpha, but we didn't know for sure, because, you know, was Alpha just trying to manipulate the situation? So it would have been nice to, but then he just dives off the boat.
Yeah. And so here you have Dee completely telling the whole truth, not trusting this bartender with good, but nobody believes her. In fact, she gets scolded and chastised. Mm. And then next thing you know, Billy and his men have everyone at gunpoint. Yeah. And she's hiding. And Brooke tells, Brooke told her Lydia was in the dinghy, so we thought she went there, but she was just kind of hiding and watching. And then he starts killing everybody, which was really chilling. And she still stayed hidden until some of the riverboat people were ready to give up Lydia's position.
I know.
That's right when she came out and slit that guy's throat to protect her daughter, I think, you know. So that was it. Like, not only there's a few things. Like, I tried this out, but no one helped me. No one, I was honest, did everything right, and I got the shit end of the stick. Also, they were vulnerable to this attack that I tried to help them with, and also they turned on us.
Yeah.
So nope, that's why D died, because of all that. It's like, no, this doesn't work for me at all.
and when the second in charge that you like, his name was Nolan, the guy with the beard, he's like, funny thing is, it's like, why am I here? I followed all the rules. I hate the poor people as well. I shouldn't be counted in these getting killed.
Yeah.
Look at the way they're dressed. You know?
And the other thing too is that Brooke, well, at first I was thinking, man, Brooke tried to take Lydia away, and it was almost like a child protective services thing where it's like, you're not a good mother, and Lydia wanted to be with Brooke, and that's got to hurt for Dee. But I think at least equally important is that Dee genuinely believes that believing in all this stuff is going to cost Lydia her life. So it's not safe for her. She thinks Brooke's endangering her, you know? So that's a big part of why it doesn't work for her either. Which is interesting. I thought that was all very well played as far as the writing of the episode goes, you know?
Yeah, and it was extremely satisfying when Alpha took the knife to that guy's throat, grabbed the gun and shot the other guy, and then just in the ensuing chaos managed to rescue her daughter, because that's that sort of thing. It all gets smaller and smaller of who you protect, you know. Do I try and rescue everyone and give up my daughter, perhaps, if it doesn't succeed? Or do I just create chaos and escape with my daughter?
Yeah.
And in the end, you know, Alpha obviously chooses that her family is more important than the group family.
Well, Alpha's the kind of person, just for fun, who would just kill a couple people on the way out.
No, that's true.
I never liked you. So, what else?
I got one more. Just yeah, going for go. Let's go. Let's go. I would say the RV park was another beautiful set, and old school. It felt dressed. I loved the her checking the empty gas canisters, the crash car in the background. Again, we're going back to an eerie, empty feeling of tension being brought back into it. And, you know, thinking of, like, you know, is this a good place to stay? Is this a good place to hole up? You know, and they go inside. There are so many stories told by just all the things that are strewn around the inside of the abandoned RV, like the tea set. And when she notices the tea set, she suddenly realizes that maybe I am too far one way. And as she says later in the episode, you know, 9 is so small, and there are moments where you need to allow a child to be a child, and then just as she's thinking about a tea party, some zombies turn up. And she thought, oh, this is a good time to train Lydia.
It seemed like the first time Lydia had ever seen zombies, because she's like, there's people from the boat. So
yeah,
I'm like, wow, maybe. Was she like super sheltered? I don't remember if we saw her see zombies in that first flashback episode, but you'd think she'd know that they were out there at least. You know,
you would think, yeah, but maybe it was just the mist.
And if it was her first time seeing them, that was not the best time to be like, okay, we're going to practice killing them.
Yeah, exactly. Straight to the head, even though you're half their size. Here's
you got to work up to that. Come on.
Yeah, exactly. But it was interesting, Lydia's reaction, because there's fight or flight, and which everyone knows, but there's also a third one where you get frozen in place.
Mm-hmm.
And so she's like almost hypnotized seeing of them, and it was very well played by the young actor. You know, is she there just to give herself up? She's tired of doing it, but will she just allow the zombies to eat her? But then there was a nice use of the environment when Alpha pulled down the awning of the RV to trap them all, and then quickly dispatched them.
Yeah. And,
but also I think she knew that at that point that maybe she started to think that maybe this is not a world for a 9-year-old.
Yeah, I mean, she said, as you said, you know, oh, I forget. Well, actually, they were sitting there and she was like, I heard the fairies and they were whispering to me. And in her mind, she's just like, oh, she's living in this fantasy world because she's just a little kid. And I forget that she's only 9 and 9 is so small. And, oh, man, I've been so selfish. Like, how can I let her be in this world? And so I think, yeah, she was going to kill her just to give her a release from having to deal with these horrors. And then she was going to kill herself, I think she said.
Yeah.
And by the way, I think it's on purpose that she's like, 9 is so small. I must have been small too. And earlier in the episode, she said that's when she killed her father, when she was 9.
Yeah, exactly.
So she's like, I don't want my daughter to have to deal with the kind of things I had to deal with.
No. Was she even giving herself some forgiveness for yeah. that?
Yeah. But then... yeah, then it turned out to be the Whisperers, so that sort of interrupted it.
But it was interesting how she was happy to kill her daughter and kill herself. But as soon as the Whispers arrived, she flipped into self-preservation mode.
Yeah.
And so it's interesting, she wouldn't just, oh, well, we're dead, I'm going to die. But suddenly when there's someone else involved, a little split in the timeline and something has caused it to cling on, to hang on to life again and want to live again, if only to go out in their own way and protect a daughter again.
Yeah. It's interesting how like a pattern interrupt can, or just something like, I remember, I don't know why this comes back to me, but when I was in like junior high school, walking down the street with my friend and we got into some fight. And so we were walking on opposite side of the street and then some crazy dude comes down the street and the fight was over. We're just like, yeah. Oh shit, what the hell is that? You know,
yeah.
Just interrupts whatever's going on.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, exactly.
yeah. That last scene, was good. And then the part you didn't mention is Dee finds Brooke all bloody
yes.
and she's about to kill her. And then,
Dee's like,
can I ask, was like, had Brooke just given up? I didn't realize why she was. Was she just tired and was at the end of a tether while she was kneeling and not moving? And
yeah,
she hadn't been bitten, had she? No,
I don't think so. No. Yeah, I think she was just really depressed because she said everyone's dead. And so I presume that Billy, because Billy just didn't want to kill everyone. But I think when Alpha sort of kicked off this fight, and I guess they ended up killing everyone except for Brooke got away, right?
But that was an interesting line by Brooke. She said, "What?" Which is kind of like going back to what's happening today with all the animosity to each other. Is like, what do you expect's going to happen after this? That we're all just going to go back to normal?
That's exactly what I was thinking. So I'm glad she said it.
Yeah,
because I have a little thing about Billy. He was just pretty villainy, you know.
Yeah,
they couldn't develop all the characters, and he was the one that I don't think got very much development.
Yeah,
a bit one note, but so Brooke says, "You did this. You're sick," and I'm like, "What? Why?" Because she saw this guy signaling to his friend and told on it. What was she supposed to do? Or was it because she killed the guy after they had just shot three people? I don't really get where Brooke was coming from here.
I think she thought that she had it under control and was going to negotiate her way out of it. And then Alpha putting herself and her kid first just created the chaos. And then it all fell apart.
She did not have it under control, though. But yeah, she did not maybe have it under control. It wouldn't have been as bad if Alpha didn't come in. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, but it could have been. But that seemed the way that with the Billy and all his henchmen, the only one with guns, everyone on their knees, that it's eventually going to devolve in that because someone will make a break for it or someone will challenge them.
I would hope in that moment that I would have the grace not to say, "Oh, you fucked this all up," but more like, "Wow, there was nothing we could do there," you know, like.
Yeah. But then maybe Brooke's thinking that she fucked it all up because she didn't listen and she wanted to have that party, and it was during the party that of course, that's when the attack happens, you know.
And then this was a pretty impactful moment. She goes, Dee's like, "Lydia was right. Death is too forgiving for you," and then cuts this deep gash on her face with her skin flaps hanging off. That was pretty rough.
Yeah.
So she'll remember.
Because, you know, her own appearance seems to be obviously very important to her. And even though she survived, she would always, that face was cut in half, basically.
I wouldn't mind seeing that character again at some point.
Yeah, no, that would be an interesting turn up, you know.
Yeah,
to see how the character has changed when the safety of her of everything is in question.
And so then, you know, we already talked about they meet the Whisperers, and you can tell they never show the leader's face, but you see her thick blonde hair when she takes off her mask, and says, "What did they say?" You know, first they were saying spare her, meaning don't kill Lydia.
Yeah.
And then she said, "I'm Hera, don't speak." Wisp, and pulls off her mask and you see her blonde hair. And then she says, "Whisper." And then you see that Alpha in these little voiceover interludes has been talking to her skin mask, I guess, or her head. And she said, "I was keeping myself from my nature, but that was the end of Dee and the beginning of me. And then I met you and you showed me love." And that was the last line. So that's why I feel like they must intend on having another episode, because we don't really know the story of Alpha and Hera. I mean, it's enough of a punchline to know that she killed the leader and took her face as her mask, but I feel like there's a story there, right?
Oh yeah, no, definitely room for a part two. There's where we're going to start a whole, you know, series of the story of Alpha, which would be a good watch.
Yeah, I don't know if this series will continue on. It hasn't been greenlit for season two yet, and I'm not sure the ratings are great. But I hope it comes back.
Oh, really? That's interesting.
Yeah,
but they have so many offshoots now. Is like, you know, there's a built-in audience, minimum audience for each episode. So maybe they're thinking, well, it makes a bit of a profit. So if we have just keep on making product, people will watch it. So, you know, the more we have you know, the more we can make money off. And I joined AMC Plus for this. And I'm like, oh, well, you know, so at least see all the Walking Dead stuff. And I wonder what else is on there. And pretty much nothing. Only kind of movies I'd seen before or a series I wasn't really interested in. So maybe, you know, they're just trying to get more and more content for this, which you know, I'm happy about.
Give Breaking Bad another try. Like, I don't even know if that's on there, but...
Yeah, no, I will do. I will do.
Yeah, it's so good. Well, okay.
Because I know you love Better Call Saul.
Yeah.
Is that finished now?
It just finished, yeah, and it was such a great ending.
Oh, good.
So good. Very good, yeah. Okay, what about notes? Anything?
Notes. Yeah, I was very good to see when they're using the gormaflage. That it was on their face as well. And they hadn't just kind of like put the gore on their body. They actually put it all over their faces as well. Because we've seen in The Walking Dead recently that you don't need it on your face.
And I liked when Alpha was rubbing it on Lydia's face and whispering nice things into her ear. It's like very alpha thing to do.
Yeah. And it was that whole scene when they came out of the boat and were being attacked and Alpha fell under the kind of bony zombie. I don't know why she wasn't able to throw that off. It seemed to be a lot
like
more
a zombie
heavier.
Blanket.
Yeah. Well, I thought it was like a zombie elven cloak because as soon as they got under it, they were invisible from everyone. Yeah, the cloak of invisibility. But then, like, they did this scene. We've always been waiting for that hand to the zombie hand to be punched out of the dirt of the graveyard, where we had Alpha's human hand punching out through the back of the zombie.
Yeah, that's cool.
Which I thought was great.
Mm-hmm.
Note for you?
I think that these episodes, well, I really like the opening title sequence. Yeah. It's short, but it's very cool looking and comic booky. And they show like a bit of each of the six episodes. Mm. But I think they were supposed to be presented or aired
in the order
that they are in the title sequence.
Right.
The first one is the fiery explosion, which would have been the Blair Gina episode. I'm glad they didn't do that one first because it was so crazy. It might have made people think that's what the whole series is going to be. Mm. The second one is a graveyard, which you haven't seen. And third is a skull with a snake going into the nasal cavity or coming out. We haven't seen. The fourth is a woman staring into a lighted window. It's creepy with a big full red moon in the background. And then the fifth is a motorcycle. So the Joe Evie episode apparently wasn't supposed to be until almost the end. And then the sixth one was the Alpha episode.
They've really flipped it around, haven't they?
Yeah. So I don't know.
But I like how I like the order of things that have been coming so far.
Me too. Yeah.
Yeah. I think it's. Absolutely. Yeah. It was interesting that the cold opening was. It was 8 minutes and 44 seconds before the opening credit came in.
Yeah, it was a while. Yeah.
Yeah.
Because I went back to scroll through the episode to find it so I could make that note I just did. And I was like, where the hell is it? Oh, it's way over here. What else?
I think it was the only another note I had of was that you're a target. If you become a target. When you settle down and you know, it seems that it's like small groups always have a problem because there's always a bigger group. and I found that having those lights coming off, the fight over the lights on and off was a argument over two realities, a reality of false security and when Alpha turns it off to gain her night vision, it's the feeling of reality, basically.
And I don't know if I read this wrong, but occasionally the lights would just flicker when no one was even doing anything. And I thought that was like, those lights are going out, man. They can't stay on forever.
I wonder how they powered. I guess they must have sort of kind of a generator dipping in the water. Because I can't imagine where they were drawing
well, they said
their power
fuel.
From.
They said they needed
to get
fuel.
Yeah, now you're right. Yeah. That makes sense.
I had just a couple things about this guy, Billy. he's kind of interesting. He's really into the idea of reclaiming dignity. That's
right.
What he mentioned, you know, preserving everyone's dignity. I was looking at his guys on second watch, and their beards were pretty well manicured, unlike mine, mm-hmm. and their hair, they had good haircuts. They're all in wetsuits. But when Brooks said, "Please don't hurt anyone, you're men," he goes, "They look great, don't they? Yeah. Come on, smile, boys. Like, you belong here."
Yeah.
It's pretty dumb of him to think that he could do that and still live peacefully. I mean, that just makes him super crazy and all the people he's with super crazy in a way that I don't think is believable.
Yeah. No, right. But he had this great, great line of, like, you know, to Brooke, he goes, "You'll still be in charge of Pep."
Yeah, like that too. Pep. And then she was like, insulted by that. Yeah. She, for that moment, she stopped being afraid and was just insulted.
Oh, yeah. How dare you?
Yeah, exactly. All right. That was good. Let's take a little break. There is more to come. Stay with us.
See that hag down there by the stream? There's no trouble she hasn't seen. Once they called her River Queen. Her evil reign supreme. Rolled with a gun. Fearful of none. Murdered for gain. Long was her reign. Drank with the men. Foul-mouthed and mean. Riverboat Queen.
Obvious threat to untold numbers of citizens.
The people it kills get up and kill.
Are they slow moving, Chief?
Yeah, they're dead. They're all messed up.
This is a Walking Dead cast news update.
All right, breaking news. Tales of the Walking Dead showrunner Channing Powell is a woman. I did not know that. I've been referring to her as he. I'm sorry. It's news to me.
Very important.
Karen, she let me know that, and yeah. I appreciate it. Next, Maggie and Negan, the spinoff, got a new title. Instead of Isle of the Dead, it's now called The Walking Dead, Dead City. Mm. And I was kind of wondering if there's an AMZ executive going, "Isle of the Dead's going to be great." Yeah, Isle of the Dead. Wait, yeah. I Love the Dead. Oh, yeah. That we can have that.
Yeah. Or someone comes in and says, "What's an aisle?"
Yeah, well, that's...
We're in a supermarket? I don't know.
I mean, that it's in Manhattan, which technically is an island, but when you say aisle, you think of a tropical island or something.
Yeah,
you know?
Exactly.
And so I like the sound of it. It's cute, but I think Walking Dead, Dead City is a better title, personally.
Yeah, because I say with things, if you need to think about the implied cleverness of it, then it's you've got the wrong,
it's too much.
Wrong thing. Yeah.
Dead City is just
Dead
more
City is great. Like, look, I'm, you know, having lived in New York, it's I'm hoping that it'll be really good. Yeah. And you know, I heard you on last week's episode say about the second episode. I love the early days of the zombie apocalypse, and we had a taste of it with Fear, and obviously we're not getting this with the New York one, but I would love to see how things kicked off in New York.
I know. I mean, that was one of the things about The Walking Dead that was kind of a bummer to me. Like, well, AMC's cheap and they're always on a budget, so they just shoot in the woods in Georgia all the time, and now they're doing one in Manhattan. I'm like, that's awesome, but how are they gonna afford
How's it,
it
going to work? Yeah.
Is it going to be good? Yeah. I hope so. I mean, that's the part of the series that I'm at all interested in, to be honest. Yeah. I don't really want to see a series with Maggie and Negan, but...
And is it because you don't like that they're okay with each other now, or is it...
I had such a... I think they've let Negan off the hook to a degree, and I don't think they're going to be okay with each other in the series,
right.
But talking about the first or whatever it was, 8 episodes of this season where it was all about them
in the
underground, I found it quite annoying. Yeah. For the most part, and not fun to talk about. And so I'm hopefully it won't be like that with the series, but I don't know. It's been a while since I thought about it, but it's just, I think they should hate each other because he bludgeoned her husband's head with the bat right in front of her.
Yeah.
No matter if he saved her son or whatever, you would think they wouldn't want to spend any time around each other. Yeah. And even if they do, that's not fun. It's like, hey, let's watch this woman who hang out with the guy who killed her husband.
Yeah. Yeah, I know. It's a little hard to swallow. Like when Rick slashed his throat, you know, because he's pleading for everything and trying to talk him around. And I thought that was perfect. And that's where his character should have ended. And I didn't kind of like if I found all the redemption arc of him just not believable. I think Rick would have killed him in that moment, you know, and not saved him. But it was good for Rick's character, I guess. And so I find it difficult, which led to all sorts of problems with Negan still being around. But he is one of my favorite characters, and there are moments when he goes into full Negan where the show just gets elevated.
Yeah, I completely agree with that. In fact, I think he's a great character. It's more about the relationship with Maggie that I'm not that much enjoying, but I do enjoy that he has tried to reform and that he wants to fit in and just Jeffrey Dean Morgan is so damn charming and so fun good, to watch. Yeah. And so is Lauren Cohen. I mean, not as charming as Jeffrey Dean Morgan, but she's great too. I like her character and everything. It's just the two of them together. I would rather see just about any other two characters in The Walking Dead do a show.
Because the question I always had is like, you know, the with the saviors and our heroes, that was a war. And the question is, now that the war's over, how do you behave to your former enemies? Like there was the Civil War in America and World War II, like Europe torn apart, and now, you know, we're friends with the Germans and the Japanese and all of that. But, you know, how long after a war ends does the animosity to your former enemy last?
Yeah.
And when it's so personal with...
That's the personalness of it to me is a pretty big...
Still to have a hard time buying it. And I love that. That's actually one of my favorite episodes of the baseball bat one where they're all kneeling, because it was so traumatic and it was such a change in direction and a reassertion of no one's safe. Anyone can die. Mm-hmm. And, you know, good guys can die as well as bad guys. And for me, I was just like, oh, it's finally gotten good again. But I was shocked that so many people left watching the series after that. Yeah. It just didn't occur to me that that would be the fallout from it.
Yeah, I mean, reading the comic, I learned very quickly that this was the kind of story where you need to be ready for anyone to die at any time.
Yeah.
And to appreciate it, you can't be mad about that, you know?
Yeah, no, exactly.
And so...
because that's what Negan would have done.
Yeah, but most people don't think that way about what makes a good story. They're just in their emotion about the character. And I do think maybe it wasn't the right choice to show it so graphically with Glenn.
I agree. There was that one scene where his eyes are bulging.
Nicotero got carried away with that. Yeah. Because that's just punishing to the people who like the character. I don't think there's a good artistic reason for it. It's just gore hound fiend glee, I think. But
I think so.
But yeah, I agree with you. And even Steven Yeun, like he was happy to go out that way and go do other things.
Yeah.
So yeah.
Yeah, because at least that's one of the problems I've had with the Walking Dead, that they need better contract lawyers, because often the story is done because they can't figure out a contract or someone wants to leave
Carl.
Early.
Yeah.
Yeah. And someone wants to leave early, like Michonne, she was the main character, but she's like, oh, I've got these Marvel movies.
She has a daughter in there.
Write me out. Yeah.
And a son. Yeah.
And I'm like, figure it out, you know?
But I was glad to hear that there's a Michonne Rick series, because they need to wrap up that story. So
they
I'm excited to wrap that up. Yeah.
Yeah.
Let's see. It began that show, Dead City, formerly Isle of the Dead, filming in New Jersey, and is supposed to premiere next year with a 6-episode first season. And the synopsis, in case people forgot, says Dead City envisions the popular Maggie and Negan characters traveling into a post-apocalyptic Manhattan, long ago cut off from the mainland. The crumbling city is filled with the dead, and denizens who have made the New York City their own world, full of anarchy, danger, beauty, and terror. That sounds pretty good.
Yeah, sounds great.
And then last, speaking of Jeffrey Dean Morgan, I don't know if you heard this, but he joined the cast of The Boys for season 4.
Oh, yes.
Right?
Yes, yes, yes. Cool. Yeah, that's going to be fantastic.
If you guys haven't seen that show, it's funny as hell. It's super gory. Yeah. If you don't like gore, don't watch it, but it's a really
it's
good...
It's head-popping good.
Yeah, well-written show. Yeah. And I'm excited to...
And see. Funny as well.
Yeah, and he seems like he'll be perfect on there. Yeah, it's funny as hell, yeah.
Yeah, it'll be great. And see, Homelander is my favorite character on that.
Oh, man, and, so dark.
Yeah, yeah.
He's very good. The actor's just...
Yeah. So good. Yeah.
So good. And the showrunner is Eric Kripke, who also ran, at least for part of it, Supernatural, which JDM was also on, so maybe that's why that connection. But excellent. I think he'll be great on there.
But the New York one will be really interesting because I hope it's in, you know, like in The Last of Us where the nature begins to retake cities is such a great aesthetic. So I hope there's a bit of that in the New York one.
Me too. I think they did less of that early on, but they've gotten very good with environmental CG, so they can probably do some of it that way, you know. Okay, let's move on to listener moans, groans, and grunts. You want to go first?
Yeah. Steve Barr, Alpha, stop whining, Lydia. Joining the Whisperers was your idea.
Was it, though?
I don't know. I don't get that reference.
Yeah, because she was just sort of sitting there doing nothing. So I don't think it was her idea. Nice try, Steve. Okay. Danielle DeMint-Yo says, I enjoyed the backstory, but I wanted it to be longer. You, Jonathan. I was disappointed when the episode ended. I'd like to see more about Alpha being introduced to the idea of the Whisperers and how she ended up the leader.
I would say stay tuned for a part 2.
Hopefully.
Penny Lennox. It's so great to have Samantha Morton back in this character. D/Alpha is an endlessly interesting character and a perfect example of how you feel compassion and revulsion for a character at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
By the end of this episode, I was so excited for next week's episode that I remembered it's an anthology show.
That's funny.
Tear face. Will we ever get that part of the story? They introduced a lot of new information in the last 5 minutes.
That's so funny. Karen Shee says, this is my first time checking out Tales specifically because I love Sam Morton as Alpha, but I really didn't like the episode. The setting in the swamp with the steamboat was cool, but we still don't know what made Dee so steely, aloof, and overprotective of Lydia. Or am I missing something? Let me know if what we said in the podcast changed your mind about that at all.
Mm.
The only explanation is that Dee killed her own father at age 9. Plus, it rewrites a lot of the Whisperer timeline. Didn't Alpha start the Whisperers with Beta? Apparently not. So Alpha's mask was Hera's face? They could have written better material for Morton. I laughed unironically a couple of times. Karen, I definitely would recommend you check out. For some reason, I feel like Karen might appreciate episode 2. So I'd love if you decide to watch that. 40 minutes. It's really wacky and interesting. It's something very different.
Yeah, I've really enjoyed the first two. So definitely check those two out. But the change in the timeline I didn't really notice, so maybe that's why I'm enjoying it more. Mm-hmm. The small things do get very annoying. Mark Nichols, I love this one. I appreciate that they didn't make it a prequel in its true sense. It was her telling her mask how she became Alpha and why. It does seem fitting that she was about to kill Lydia when the Whispers arrive. She is completely insane. If they do a season 2 of Tales, and I hope they do, I hope that they show how she rose to lead the Whisperers and how Beta got introduced. The themes of Tales, just being creative and all with the one episode, has been fun. A little sad we're halfway done already. Absolutely.
3 more.
Yeah.
Matthew Rimmer says, I liked the boat as an unusual setting. And the period costumes in the red herring party opening. And I liked Brooke as a strong leader character, but instead of a Death on the Nile style whodunit mystery, they seemed to be teasing. The episode descended into yet another generic Walking Dead bad guys group turns up and storms the Survivor Stronghold episode, which we've seen countless times. Yeah, that's kind of a good point.
Mm-hmm.
Alpha's origins with the Whispers was all too briefly touched upon at the end. I'm sure it does fit, but what we see of Dee's pre-Whisperer days here doesn't flow well with the flashbacks we saw in The Walking Dead Prime. Yeah, I'm kind of, because we're doing this episode a little early before like interviews come out and stuff. So I hope that they ask the showrunner that. And if she gives a good answer, I will read it next week. Matthew goes on, a bit of wasted opportunity on multiple fronts, far from dreadful, but the weakest tale so far. So a pretty polarized response to this one.
Yeah, I thought it was one of the best episodes of Walking Dead of all of them. I really put it in a top tier, but it's interesting other people's takes, 100%. So Gemma Hall, I'm confused by the ending. I have a feeling Alpha met Beta first as Lydia was younger, but they must have left him to get on the boat and then met up with him later once she had taken over the Whisperers. Otherwise, it's confusing to me. It was nice to see Alpha again, but I don't think the story added much. Maybe an understanding of why she was dead against joining safe communities due to previous betrayal, and a fierce love of Lydia does seem genuine. However, the jump from protective mother to flat-out nutcase who chops other people's head off is still not explained here. Even though she has an abusive background and has the capacity for violence, letting babies potentially get eaten by walkers was always too extreme for me, as well as the murder of Henry, who was essentially a child. Alpha felt no remorse for Henry. A riverboat seems a good idea for survival, though. But fancy upper-class dinner seems wasteful a year into the apocalypse. There's always some asshole that wants to have what you have as well. Yeah, exactly right.
I mean, Alpha's such a hateful character because she's lived this life of experiencing abuse herself and betrayal and and people not trusting her and treating her badly. And so she just clings to Lydia, and everyone else is maybe can be used. But when you're in such a bad state like that, I think it's when you basically consider everyone else your enemy, it's easy to do things like murder Henry, who was essentially a child, because no one else matters, you know? That's the way I see it.
And I think people's behavior that would be buried normally when all society disappears and rules disappear, they become perhaps the person they always were. And so she just, you know, it's like when a normal person goes to war and they turn into a vicious killing monster.
Your self.
So maybe she's always been like this, you know, and there was some extra triggers, but she might just be one of those people.
And let me just say, Joe Lavinia says, Gemma, I think she left the Whisperers, found Beta, then created her own band of Whisperers. And I think she left these Whisperers that we just saw her team hook up with, found Beta, and then went back and killed Hera and took over her Whisperers. But we don't know for sure.
All right. Greg Schwamb, last week's episode. I enjoyed the Edge of Tomorrow vibes, although I feel they could have explored a few different options besides getting the truck and trying to get to the same places every time. I adore Gillian Bell and have ever since First Fight. I think she's a great comedic actor and really showed her chops here. I don't know if the beaten down receptionist and the overbearing boss has been beat to death yet, but I thought it worked here. Given that we haven't seen main characters get massacred at the end of episodes, I wonder if they are going to do like What If and the Telltale games and have them meet in the future.
I mean, I think the coolest thing they could do with this series to have all the Walking Dead fans excited and want to watch the episode would be to do a What If style episode where Shane meets either the governor or Negan, right?
I do miss Shane.
Take that idea, because everyone always wanted to know, what would Shane do in this situation? That, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
That'd be cool.
Shane was right.
And then I kind of agree with you that I wish they had explored different things besides just the gas station, but it was a short episode. I guess that was.
Because I really started to enjoy that when the receptionist grabbed the shotgun. And I'm like, oh, fantastic. This is a start of the ZA. See what people do. And she was off on a tangent. And I'm like, really looking forward to seeing her experience as, you know, someone that's always been beaten down and quite weak in real life. When everything falls apart, she's the one that grabs a shotgun and starts doing things. But then we cut back to it and I wasn't happy with it. But then by the end of the episode, I turned around and really enjoyed it.
That's cool.
Yeah.
Okay, one more email. This is also about last week's episode from Carrie Abel. She says, sorry I'm late to the party. I just had a few comments about the Blair Jean episode. Jillian Bell was in Britney Runs a Marathon back in 2019. It had its comedic beats, but it was also about women and body image and self-esteem. Jillian as Britney does a fantastic performance. I remember seeing good reviews about that movie and being curious, but I never got around to watching it. She goes on, also, I couldn't get a close-up of the pictures of her nieces. Could they be Lizzie and Mika? She has a winky face. And two characters in two spinoffs being named Wendell. Blair insisting, I did this for Wendell, when she gets Gina arrested. No, you didn't, you selfish cow. She goes on, thanks, as always, for your coverage. Can't wait to hear next week all about Alpha. Well, I hope you enjoyed it.
Yeah.
And finally, we have a call, I think, on this week's episode from Steve Brown.
Steve.
Hello, Walking Deadcast. This is Steve, and this is for D. I was a little confused at first with this couple in the bed because I thought he looked like Alpha's husband, but I guess not. Nope. And now we see Alpha and Lydia. So is this after what we saw in the Walking Dead show proper, I guess?
In the middle.
Okay, so now we know Alpha's original name, or what she called herself, D. So Lydia is the only kid on the boat? Man, sad for her. So she killed her own father when she was 9, and she's reminding us of what happened in the show proper. I like it. I don't like what she did. I like what the show told us. Oh, that's just... Come on, Lydia. I mean, she's still your mom. I know she's kind of a jerk face, but man, just to say it like that, oh, I have Brooke. What? I don't understand the logic there of... She's got a knife, she's going to kill me, so I'm going to jump in the water and die, probably.
Yeah.
And now Lydia's gone also? Ooh, this scene between Brooke and D, Alpha. How tall is Samantha Morton? How tall is this other woman, Lauren Glazer? She just towers over her. There's a lot of whispering and shushing that I guess is supposed to foreshadow the whispers to those of us who know. Okay, so that's why Billy jumped in the water, because he had people waiting for him. Oh, calling Dee a soccer mom is going to be a big mistake. Oh, there's the F-bomb from Aging Out, Erica. At least it was on the subtitles, and you can kind of read her lips of it, but it's hard to hear. Another whisper. Okay, so she killed a couple of the bad guys, and now she's on shore killing zombies, trying to protect Lydia. Okay. Ooh, that image of the hand coming out of the flesh, and wow, she learned how to hide from the zombies real quick. So Brooke made it off the boat successfully alive. Oh, she's going to teach her how to kill walkers. I mean, there's only 3 of them, so maybe. Well, that was pretty clever, dropping the awning on them and then just knifing them through the top of the awning. Oh, so she didn't start the Whisperers. She joined them. Wow, okay. So she, was that the head of Hera there? Just... kind of dead, and it looks like I just got a glimpse of the trailer for next week. I guess we get Malkovich next week. Nice.
What? Malkovich? No, I don't think so.
Was that him? No, I don't think so.
I think it was someone who looks like Malkovich. I would have heard about that. I think so. Thanks, Steve.
Thanks, Steve.
All right, that is our show, episode 476. Thanks, as always, for listening, everybody. Thanks, Jonathan. It's fun to have you on.
Right, fun.
If you guys want to write in or leave us a message, you can find all our contact information at podcastica.com.
And while you're there, be sure to check out our other shows.
So many right now. There's House of the Dragon. Coming up soon is our Rings of Power, Lord of the Rings, yeah. Rings of Power coverage. And there's She-Hulk and Lock and Key and Sandman. Those are the ones that are all going right now.
Fantastic.
Next episode of this podcast, Tales of the Walking Dead, Season 1, Episode 4, Amy/Dr. Everett and Lucy should be back to talk about that one. So excited to get back with her. This episode is made possible by Patreon supporters like Destiny Salazar, who pledged their support at patreon.com/JasonCabassi. So thank you to Destiny. If you decide to do that yourself, you can get ad-free versions of each of the episodes along with some other perks. Oh yeah, and if you want to come and watch the finale of The Walking Dead with us, or you just want to find out about it, go to podcastica.com/TWD finale party. We got like, I think there's going to be about 70 people as of right now, but
that looks so fun. Yeah. I'm jealous. I wish I wasn't on the other side of the world.
We might do a little Zoom thing and let some people zoom in, so I'll let you know.
Please do.
Anything else you want to mention or promote before we close?
No. Just thanks for having me on. I'm really I encourage everyone to join the Patreon group. I was a humble listener. And for a few voice messages and interacting, here I am co-hosting with one of my favorite podcasters of all time on one of my favorite shows.
Yeah, it's been good to have you get involved.
Thank you.
That Thanks voice. For having me aboard. I mean, how could we not ask you? Alrighty, that's our show.
Thanks for listening. Don't get bit, Amanda Rogerson.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.